Like I said earlier, and like Krista alluded to, man, we just want you to know how incredibly excited we are that you guys are here with us. No matter what you think your past or your story says about you, no matter what waves and wind you're battling in your life, no matter how long you've believed that you couldn't possibly be welcome in a place like this with a story that looks like yours, one of the things we want you to know beyond a shadow of a doubt is this, is that if you walk in here feeling broken, you'll fit right in. Because this is a place full of broken people led by a broken leader. And we want you to know just how incredibly excited we are that you are here on this particular weekend, that we believe with all of our hearts that you are not here by accident. As we wrap up with part 5 of this 5-part series that we have been calling Love, Dates, and Heartbreaks. And we understand the tension that permeates through you as you realize maybe you haven't been here for any of the first 4 parts of this series, and you feel like you're coming in at the end of the movie. And our hope is simply this, is that maybe today at the end of the movie will be so compelling and so relevant to what you're walking through and the relationships of your present and your future that you'll want to go back and check out the first 4 parts of this series. Because our hope throughout this entire series has simply been this, that in our lives, every single one of us look back at the relationships of our past and see relationships that haven't gone as planned. Or maybe we look at the relationships of our present and realize that they're not heading in the direction we want them to go. And every single one of us at some point in our relational lives have made decisions within those relationships that ultimately undermine our relationships. But what we believe with all of our hearts and what we're compelling every single one of us to is this, is that that trend doesn't have to continue. Is that we are capable of making decisions and making changes within the context of our relationships in our present and in our future that change the direction of our relational life, that allow our relationships to get better from this day forward. But getting better within those relationships and making the changes necessary for us to find ourselves in healthier relationships. And I'm not just talking about romantic relationships. I'm talking every relationship of your life. If you're a parent, if you're a friend, if you're a coworker, if you're a boss, every one of our relationships have the capability to go to a whole new level when we first acknowledge the myths that we've been living according to within those very relationships. You see, it's far too easy for us to begin to live according to myths like this, like the right person myth. But if you're anything like me, there has at least been a time or two in your relational life in which you have believed that when I find the right person, everything will be all right. When I have the right child, get the right friend, meet the right boyfriend, marry the right wife, that's when things will be all right in my life. And what we miss when we live according to that is this. We miss that great relationships are built more on becoming the right person than they are on finding the right person. Miss like the promise myth. That a promise always trumps the need for preparation. And that all we need for this thing called marriage to work is a promise and a rockin' party. And as long as we have that, this thing should go the distance, right? And what we miss is that when we adhere to the promise myth, we miss that great relationships aren't built on words. Great relationships are built on work. And becoming who we need to become within the context of our relationships requires us to put in the hard work. But in order for us to become the best half of every relationship that we enter into, and in order for us to be willing to put in the necessary work for our relationships to be healthier from this day forward, it always brings us back to this one place. This one command that Jesus laid down over 2,000 years ago that is just as real, just as relevant, just as significant for our relationships right here, right now in 2022. He said, if you adhere your life to this one command, your relationships will change for the better from this day forward. He said this, real love is no better signified than when one is willing to lay down one's life for one's friends. Jesus was essentially saying that if you want great relationship with them, you have to be willing to give up yourself for them. If you want great relationship with them, you have to give of yourself for them. But in order for us to be willing to give of ourselves for them, it requires some changes to come about within our actions and our decisions within our relationships. The reason that I know that is because when I look at my own life and my own actions within my relationships, be it my marriage, be it my parenting, be it my friendships, be it with my coworkers, what I realize is that oftentimes I am a long way from that. Anybody else with me? I am a long way from proving with my actions that I'm willing to lay down my life for you. But moving from where we are to where we need to be to encounter healthier relationships requires us to begin to implement the fine print that we, and really the world around us, so often overlooks when it comes to our relationships. And here's the good news about the fine print when it comes to our relationships. It is a simple step-by-step guide that Paul gives us that he says, man, if you'll just implement these slowly, one at a time, into your relationships, you will begin to see yourself transformed. And ultimately, if you become someone who is transformed, going back to the right person myth, it's more about becoming than it is about finding, your relationships will change for the better because you are in the process of changing. And when we implement those steps into our relationships, we slowly make our relationships work, and we make them work better. You see, that's where we were in the first 3 weeks of this series, as we focused in on the word love. But then last week, we took a shift, and we focused on the second word in the title of this series, dates. And what we really focused in on was this concept, that in our lives, great relationships always start great. And if we want great relationships, we have to set the bar correctly from the very first encounter. If you don't want relationships like the majority of relationships, you can't date like the majority of daters. But today, for lack of a better term, we take a shift into the last part of the series, this last heartbreaking part of the series. To acknowledge this truth that every single one of us have encountered if we have spent any time on this earth. And that truth is this, is that on this earth, things in our life don't always go as planned. Can I get an amen, right? But in our lives and in our relationships, things don't always work out the way we want them to. That within the context of our relationships, within the context of our finances, within the context of our workplaces, things don't always go like we want them to go. But when things fail and when we experience heartbreak and despair, in the face of the plans of our life not working out exactly the way we wanted them to, the questions we're always faced with go something like this. What do I do now? Where do I go from here? How do I heal from this? How do I move forward in a healthy way? How then do I possibly believe that God still has a purpose and a plan for my life and my relationships when I've experienced such pain and such heartbreak at the hands of another person that I'm gun shy to even want to get into another relationship that's similar to the one that I just came out of? And this morning, I want to start us in a place that I feel like is so fitting. And we're starting here, but my hope is that you feel this theme woven throughout the rest of our time today. See, what I believe is that when we experience heartbreak in our lives, that God provides truth for those moments of heartbreak and despair that carry us through, that allow us to get back up on the horse, that allow us to enter back into relationship and to ensure that the relationships of our future don't travel the same path as the relationships of our past. You see, I believe with all of my heart that there are two truths that we can cling to in our lives when we experience relational brokenness. The first is this, is that just because you are heartbroken doesn't mean that you are broken. Just because you have a broken heart, it doesn't mean that you are broken. You see, moving forward in the aftermath of relational brokenness oftentimes requires us to take a step back and acknowledge this truth. That relationship that you are in or that you were in does not, will not define your value and your worth. Come on, y'all. If you don't take anything else from this morning, I hope that you take that with you. The relationship you find yourself in, the relationship you've just come out of, never wants to find your value and your worth on this earth. You are no less valuable in this world because you are not in a relationship. You are no more valuable in this world because you are in a relationship. Being single or being single again because you had to set healthy boundaries within that dating relationship, it doesn't mean that you're broken. In fact, when we pick up this book, there are multiple places that actually speak to the contrary. Paul, you know, the dude that we've been talking about that's really laid the groundwork for what it looks like to love people well. You know what Paul said? If it's at all possible for you to stay single, do it. Stay single. It's like Paul knew something about, like, life would be a little less complicated if you just stayed single or something. You see, you are not broken just because you find yourself alone or feeling alone or alone again. And I know being single in what feels like a married world oftentimes leads us to begin to believe things that just aren't true about ourselves and our value and our worth. But it isn't just our value that needs reattached to the truth. It's also our purpose in the moments of heartbreak that also needs reattached to the truth. You see, here's the second truth that I hope that you and I cling to in the moments of heartbreak in our lives, relationally or not. It's this. It's that there is purpose for you even when your dreams don't come true. There is still purpose for you even when your dreams don't, even when your dreams can't come true. You see, I believe with all of my heart, even in the moments where we experience heartbreak and despair and failure, that you were still created on purpose for a purpose. You were still created on purpose for a purpose. You were still and are still capable of changing this world. And don't ever allow the lies of this world or the people in this world to convince you otherwise. You see, if there's anything that I can convey to start this message this morning, my hope is that it's this. My hope is that our relational brokenness never squeezes the hope out of us. Is that the moments of relational brokenness that we walk through in our lives never leave us feeling hopeless, peaceless, powerless in our world, because we have a God that speaks the contrary to that. But I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ben, that's all well good for a world full of rainbows, butterflies, and sunshine, but that's not the world I'm living in. You see, I'm coming face to face with this dilemma, and the dilemma is this, is that for every single one of us, when we approach or reach adulthood, we approach adulthood with a plan and a schedule. Am I right? Is that as we enter into adulthood, we all have a plan for what's going to happen, and we all have a schedule for when that thing is supposed to happen in our lives. And we begin to make statements internally or externally. I'm going to graduate by. I'm going to be married by. I'm going to start my own business by. I'm going to be making X amount of dollars by. I'm going to have kids by. And when those things don't come to fruition, what we quickly begin to realize is the disappointment we face. Why? Because no one dreams of their future alone. Am I right? That was never a part of the dream scenario. That we would be back here, single, feeling alone, in the midst of relational heartbreak again. And yet here we are, in a place where we don't have to look too far back into our past to see a place where we were living a life that was going according to plan. And the relationship we entered into looked like it was going to lead to our dreams coming true. Or we don't have to look too far into our past to realize that our dreams were coming true within our relationships for a while. And then somewhere along the way, the dream began to unravel. And things got messy. And things got broken. And maybe for some of us, we walked into this room and we look at the crumbled dreams of our relationships, and what we'd admit is that those relationships crumbled because of something that I did and I'm to blame. Or maybe we look at that relationship and we're like, all right, it takes two to tangle. There was probably something that both of us did that caused the dysfunction and the hurt within that relationship. But then maybe there's a select few of you within this room or watching online that you're like, but Ben, I'm the exception. Because I was doing everything right. I was laying down my life for him. I was laying down my life for her. Ben, I was playing relationship by the book. But then I found that text, that picture, that note. What I quickly realized was that he wasn't playing by the book. She wasn't playing by the book. And now he just wants to be friends, and all I can think about is, well, you sure didn't want to be just friends last weekend. All of a sudden, she has plans for a different life and a different future, and it no longer includes me. Maybe you feel like you're at a place where you're in the midst of your second marriage, and the way this is trending, it's starting to look a whole lot like your first marriage. And then some of you are like, whoa, 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 hang up. Second marriage? I'd just love to have a first marriage. Don't go screwing up your second one before I even get a chance to have a first one. And it feels like everybody else's dreams are coming true. And it feels like everybody else is living the dream that you had. And yet here you are in the midst of brokenness, in the midst of hurt, wondering if things will ever change. And if any of those things apply to the story and the feelings you're feeling right now, all I want to say is this. I'm sorry. I'm not saying sorry out of a place of pity or because I feel sorry for you. I'm saying sorry because your hurt is valid. And it's not worth being minimized. And I understand that the hurt you're walking through or have walked through is heartbreaking and it's gut-wrenching. And what I'm about to say may not bring comfort, but my hope is that it at least brings company and context to the situation and the relational brokenness you find yourself in. That maybe it provides company and context to the future relational brokenness that every single one of us may experience in our lives. You see, do you realize that when we look back 2,000 years ago at the people who followed Jesus closest, one of the things we often believe is this. Well, if I'm following Jesus with all my heart and I'm playing by the book and I'm doing all the things right, then nothing should ever bad should happen to me, right? Like, that's the way this game works. That's the way the equation plays out. And you see, the crazy part is that oftentimes the church has sold that bad theology. Oftentimes some dude has stepped up here on stage and promised you, if you just do X, Y, and Z, you'll be guaranteed that everything in your life will go all right. And y'all, you know what that means? We haven't actually picked this book up and looked into it. Because if we had, the God of the universe who put on flesh and walked on this earth spoke again and again and again to the contrary. In this life, you will have trouble. Follow me, and you may have more. Uh-oh. That wasn't the fun part of the prosperity gospel that we wanted to sign up for. And yet, when we look back 2,000 years ago, what we find, and this is where the company and the context comes into your heartbreak, what we find is that the people who followed Jesus closest were no strangers to heartbreak. Look at the very mother of Jesus, Mary, who didn't sign up for this, was told that she was pregnant out of wedlock. And in an instant, all of her hopes, all of her dreams, the plan and the schedule she had for her life was poof, up in smoke. Her relational status was altered for life. She would never go back to the same societal standing. There was no recovering from this. When an angel came and visited Mary and told her that she was pregnant, you know what else the angel said to her? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And later on in life, your heart will be pierced by a sword. She was setting Mary up for what was going to happen in her relationship with her son when her son hung on that cross. And in the aftermath of that, that relational hurt, that heartbreak, that disappointment in her life, you know how Mary chose to respond? She responded in this way: "For I am the Lord's servant. May everything you have said about me come true." Unbelievable. John the Baptist, the guy who ushered in the very kingdom of God, who announced the coming of the Messiah of the world, this incredible phenomenon on this earth that was going to change the world for forever. You know what John the Baptist got? He didn't even get to see the best part. John the Baptist was arrested and beheaded by a corrupt and evil ruler. And before his unfair and violent and abrupt end, rotting in a jail cell, after all the good that he had done, seeing what was going to happen, this is what John said in response: "For no one can receive anything unless God gives it from heaven." A totally different perspective than what I am typically adhering to in my life. And then the very man himself that we follow with our lives, that for those of us in this room consider ourselves to be Christ followers, on the night when Jesus was to be arrested, just a few days before his execution, on a brutal and bloody cross, he kneeled to pray in the garden. And he knew what was to come. He knew the pain and the anguish that was just around the corner. He knew the relational brokenness that was going to fall on him between himself and his heavenly Father through no wrong choice of his own. Relational brokenness that was going to come on his life because of me, because of my wrong choices. He was willing to experience relational brokenness so that I didn't have to with my heavenly Father. And in the midst of what he knew was coming around the corner, there was this thought that passed through his mind: maybe, God, this isn't exactly the way I would have drawn this one up. And in Luke 22, as he's praying in the garden, Jesus says this: "Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me." But then his tone and his perspective changes in an instant. "Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." You see, here were people who, in the midst of their dreams not coming true, their hurt, way to hold their lives and their plans and their futures with to say to God, "Whatever you want, I trust you more than I trust me." And yet my issue with that is simply this: that's not oftentimes the way in which I respond in the aftermath of my own relational brokenness and heartbreak. You see, oftentimes in the midst of my relational brokenness and heartbreak, the way in which I respond is this: is I find it easy to lose hope. I find it easy in those moments to convince myself this is the time to compromise, Ben. I find it easy to begin to believe, and trust me, this one comes easy to me, y'all. A man who likes to be in control, this is the moment where it's time for me to take back control. God, I'm not so sure you can be trusted. I'm not so sure. You got a lot going on, God. Yeah, that's my justification. God, you've got a lot going on. So I'll just take this one back and take something off your plate for you, all right? And I swoop in and I begin to force the issue so that my plan, my dreams, my hopes, my schedule can get back on track. And yet what I've experienced in my life, and y'all have seen it lived out in other people's life who take that same path as me, is that in the moments of my own desperation where I take back control and I try to force the issue, what ultimately happens is I only create more despair. And yet we've also witnessed people, remarkable people in our lives, in our workplaces, in our families, in our friend groups, in our small groups, who are capable of taking a completely different approach, who are capable in the midst of heartbreak of not giving in to things that are so common like bitterness and cynicism. Remarkable people who, in the midst of their brokenness, refuse to give in to this pull that lives inside of every single one of us who have ever gone to a church or experienced religion in our lives. You see, deep inside of every single one of us, there is this pull towards what sounds great about a relationship with Jesus or religion or the church. Deep inside of every single one of us, there lives at least a sliver of the prosperity gospel. That if I just do X, then God is supposed to do Y, right? I gave, I did my part, so God, now you step forward and do yours. And you see, what we miss in clinging on to this prosperity gospel is that that was never what Jesus came to offer. That was never what he promised. And because that isn't a real form of religion, that isn't real Christianity, that form of Christianity, y'all, is really easy to walk away with. Why? We walk away from it because that form of Christianity will never come true 100% of the time. Jesus didn't invite us to an equation. Jesus said, I've got something so much better. I'm inviting you to follow me. Not because of what I'll do for you, but because of who I am and what I've already done for you. Because I've already given up everything for your sake. I've given up my life. I've experienced separation from my Heavenly Father for you, for your present, for your future. And when we keep our eyes on the fact that following Jesus isn't a promise of financial prosperity or circumstantial perfection, but a relationship that offers something eternal and makes us better at handling the difficult circumstances of life that we will undoubtedly encounter on this earth, keeping our eyes focused on that is what introduces peace into our story. That I can walk through hell on this earth and still cling to something that is bigger than any wind, than any wave that this earth can throw at me. That will not shake me because it's about far more than just my own hopes, my own dreams, my own plans, and my own schedule. And you see, there was a man a couple thousand years ago who had to learn this the hard way, walking through failure after failure. It was a man that maybe some of y'all have heard about before, a man by the name of David. And David, if you know nothing about his story, eventually rose to be the most powerful king of all time in the nation of Israel. But David's story started in much humbler beginnings. You see, David was born into a family in which he was simply a shepherd boy. He was the lowest of lows, out in the field, stinky, dirty, wrangling sheep all day. And one day, a man by the name of Samuel was put on a cause to find the next king of Israel. And so he went to David's father's house. He said, I'm here to find the next king of Israel. Bring in your sons. And so one after one, he brings in son after son after son after son. And every single one of them are buffer than David and smarter than David and older than David. And Samuel goes through them. He's like, nope, 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 nope. And he gets to the end and Samuel's like, did I have it written down right, God? Did you say 103 or was the address 105? He's like, are you sure those are all the sons you've got? And David's father is like, well, I've got one more, but I don't think you want him. Like he's out in the field right now with the sheep. He's just a little boy. And Samuel says, no, bring him in. And as soon as he encounters David, he marks David that you are to be the next king of Israel. And a few short years later, as his hopes and his dreams are beginning to grow in his mind, David, as a young teenager, is caught in the middle of a war between his nation and the nation of the Philistines. And one day, as a young teenage boy, he walks out to the battlefield. All of his brothers are out at the battlefield doing war with the Philistines. And David is there not to fight. David is there on lunch delivery. He's got all the paper bags in his hands, and he's just passing out lunches. And then he's set to go home. And as he's out on the battlefield, he encounters a giant by the name of Goliath who is taunting the Israelite army. But what David soon realizes is he's not just taunting the army, he's taunting our God. And what I know about my God is bigger than his. So David marches out to the battlefield face to face with Goliath, and he slays the giant. And in an instant, David becomes a hero of the nation of Israel. His fame and his popularity grows larger than even the present king of Israel. So much so that Saul, the present king, invites David into his palace, takes him in as one of his own, and even gives David his very own daughter to be married to him. And can you just imagine the dreams and the hopes and the plans that are flourishing in this moment? Like, everything is going to plan. Things couldn't get better until one day Saul realizes, I have made a grave mistake. How could I have brought this hero into my house and given him my daughter? You know what's going to happen? He's going to become the next king of Israel. And what's not going to happen? My very own son isn't going to get to do that. And I want my son Jonathan to be king. And so the only way that I can make that happen is, David, if you are dead. And he flies into a rage. And he chases David with his army out of his palace, and David is forced to flee into the wilderness. And in an instant, the heartbreak comes in. And David's future looks dark and uncertain. That things aren't going according to plan now. My dreams aren't coming true like I thought they would. And as David is out in the wilderness, avoiding at every turn his captors and the army that is up against him, off in the distance, he sees a village called Nob. And David has nothing. He has fled with just the clothes on his back into the wilderness. And he gets this bright idea. I'm going to go into the village, and I'm at least going to find food to feed myself. And so David proceeds into the village of Nob, and he encounters a priest by the name of Ahimelech. And he encounters Ahimelech, and he says, Ahimelech, here am I. I'm on the king's business. I have come to you on the king's business. And Ahimelech is like, but David, you're by yourself. Like, nobody on the king's business comes by themselves. David's like, oh, yeah, he's got a choice, right? The panic sets in this moment, and David chooses to take back control and to begin to lie, to force the hand and force the outcome. And he says, no, I was in such a hurry to do the king's business that I came by myself. Oh, yeah, and Ahimelech, I was in such a hurry to do the king's business, I forgot to bring food. Do you got any food? And I was in such a hurry to do the king's business, I didn't just forget to bring people, I didn't just forget to bring food, but I also don't have any weapons. Ahimelech, do you have any weapons that I could have? And you can just imagine, Ahimelech's like, why do you need a weapon if you're on the king's business? And Ahimelech goes into the back. And back with him, he brings this blanket with him, and he uncovers. And he says, we only have one weapon here, David. This is the only one that we have in our possession. And he says, the weapon that we have is the sword of the man Goliath. And it was like in this moment, God was giving David an opportunity. David, look back. Look back at the moments where you didn't know what the outcome was going to be. Look back at the moments of confusion. And remember how I've been faithful. Remember how I've provided. Remember how you don't have to take the circumstances and the outcome into your own hands. That I'm a God who's always for you, who wants what's best for you. And yet in the face of looking at that sword, David chose the opposite. David said, for there is none finer than this. Give it to me. And he takes the sword and he flees back out into the wilderness, now believing he's got something in his control to protect him. A little while later, nipping on his heels, Saul and his army come marching into the village of Nob. And they approach the priest, Ahimelech. And they say, Ahimelech, how dare you aid and abet an enemy of the king? How could you do that? And Ahimelech's like, no. He said he was on the king's business. He's one of your allies. And they wouldn't hear a word of what Ahimelech had to say. And Saul said, because you have aided and abetted my enemy, you and every one of the priests in the village of Nob will be struck down by my sword. And he executed every single one of them. And the word around David began to shift. The story began to spread that all of these priests were murdered for one reason, because David had lied. And his integrity and his character started to be called back into question. As he fled back into the wilderness, God proved time and time again that, David, I've called you to this. David, I want what's best for you. And he rose David through uncommon circumstances into his kingship of the nation of Israel. But one day, in doing what he wasn't supposed to do, David went back down the hard path. as he looked out over his kingdom on another rooftop, he saw a married woman by the name of Bathsheba. A beautiful woman, and he thought, even though I'm married, even though she's married, I have to have her, and I have to have her now. Go bring her to me. He had relations with this woman and got her pregnant. And instead of admitting to his failures and his mistakes in the moment and allowing God to have control, he took control back himself again and set up a scheme to make people believe that it was actually her husband called back from war that got her pregnant. And then when that didn't happen because her husband was doing what he was supposed to do, well, then I'll just have her husband murdered and I'll take her as another one of my wives. And because of that, not only did David lose more integrity, but he lost his very son. A few years later, David had a son by the name of Absalom. Absalom, I know parents like to claim they don't have favorites, but there was no hiding. Absalom was David's favorite son. He was the apple of his eye. And David was raising Absalom to be his predecessor, the next king of Israel. He's my greatest, and I want him to rise to that. But one day, something unbelievable happened. David's daughter was raped by a family member. And Absalom became enraged because he thought his father didn't take strong enough steps at punishing the rapist. And because of Absalom's rage, he began to plot behind his father's back to spread discord throughout the nation of Israel and to build his own army to go against David's army. Until one day he had grown his army larger than David's army, and they decided, now is our time. We're going to march on Jerusalem, and I'm going to take over the capital city. And as David saw his precious son's giant army, he knew that the only possible outcome was that he would either be defeated or for him and his people to flee. And so in that moment, we pick up this story in 2 Samuel chapter 15. The whole countryside wept aloud as all the people passed by. The king also crossed the Kidron Valley, and all the people moved on toward the wilderness. Here was David with his hopes and dreams and plans. And yet, once again, he found himself heading back out into the wilderness. And I don't know if in your life and in your circumstances, you found yourself in that place. Like, here we go again, back out into the wilderness, all alone, not knowing how this is going to play out, not knowing if this is going to get better. Faced with the decision of whether to allow things like bitterness and cynicism and a desire for control to grip you again, to compromise again and cut corners and do things that you know aren't right and aren't best for your future and that God didn't intend for your future, but I so desperately want a relationship. I so desperately want this to work out the way I want it to work out that right now I'm just going to fudge the numbers. Right now I'm just going to fudge my circumstances so that I can get what I want when I want it. And in that moment, here's the crazy thing. All of David's men expected this is just the way David's going to go again. He's always taken back control of the heartbreaking situations, and so he's going to do it again. It's the only logical solution. In verse 24, Zadok, who was a priest, was there too. And all the Levites, basically priests, who were with him, were carrying the Ark of the Covenant of God. This is ridiculously significant, and here's why. Because before David rose to kingship, as the Israelites were wandering around the desert searching for the promised land, the Ark of the Covenant was created because they believed that the actual presence of God lived within the Ark of the Covenant. Along with the presence of God, they placed relics within the Ark of the Covenant, like the Ten Commandments was in the Ark of the Covenant. And they believed that wherever the Ark of the Covenant went, that's where God was as well. Until David built the temple and they built a new house for God there. But as David was fleeing the city of Jerusalem, they made this decision. It was this decision of manipulation. We're going to manipulate God into being on our side. And so we're going to carry the ark as if we're carrying God out of the city of Jerusalem so that, God, we make a point in saying, you're on our side, not on his, right? And in the midst of all of David's men expecting this is how David's going to take back control, this is the decision again that David is going to make to manipulate the situation and try to manipulate God's plan for his life and for this world, David finally chooses the contrary. In verse 25, then the king said to Zadok, take the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the Lord's eyes, he will bring me back and let me see it and his dwelling place again. But if he says, I'm not pleased with you, then I am ready. Let him do to me whatever seems good to him. See, in this moment, David made a decision. God, in this relationship, I'm tired of adhering to things like manipulation and bargaining. Right now, I'm making a choice, even in the midst of my heartbreak and my future going dark, that I'm just going to trust you. God, you decide what is right. I acknowledge your power. I acknowledge that you see more than I do, that you see further into my life than what I am capable of seeing. And don't get me wrong, God, it hurts right now. And this isn't a whole lot of fun. But my relationship with you won't be swayed by what does or doesn't go according to my plans. And this is where David's story converges with yours and with mine. Because if you and I are going to find peace and a way forward in the midst of the heartbreaking circumstances of our lives that we have encountered, are encountering, and undoubtedly will encounter in our future, then the decision we have to make is simply this. My faith in God can't be anchored to the fulfillment of my dreams. Hello? Y'all okay? My faith in God was never meant to solely be anchored to the fulfillment of my own dreams. That this was meant to be a relationship, and this is what relationship looks like. That God, I share with you my desires, my dreams, my plans, my schedules. And I tell you, God, this is what I want, and this is what I would like to happen in my relationships, this particular relationship, my future, etc., etc., etc. But I also stop and I acknowledge your right to rule. I acknowledge your right as the God of the universe, the God of my life, to rule. And because I acknowledge that you still have a plan and a purpose for me, even in the midst of my heartbreak, I refuse to get pulled into compromise. I refuse to get pulled into bitterness. I refuse to grasp for control where control isn't meant to be mine. In the moments where my dreams can't come true, what instead I'm choosing to do when I know nowhere else to turn is this. I choose in those moments to lean in, to look up, to reach out. To lean in to you, God, to look up to you, God, to reach out to you, God, because deep down inside of me somewhere, even though I'm hurting, I still realize this truth, that you are a God who still holds my whole world in your hands. Even when I can't see it, even when I can't feel it, you are still for me. You still know better than I do. Hang on, this is tough. You still know better than I do what is best for me. Maritally, relationally, financially, in our careers, in our parenting, etc., etc., etc. I choose to see and live in a way that I acknowledge that following you wasn't some strategic move that allows me to live in the middle of some unrealistic prosperity gospel. I choose to remind myself every single day that you are a God who is for me, even though this world may not be, even though this world still hurts. You're a God who wants the very best for me. You see, here's my challenge. This is the take home this morning. This is the application that has the potential to change everything in your future and in my future. That what if on your nightstand, what if clipped to your refrigerator, what if written on the glass on your bathroom mirror, was this prayer. Then in the midst of your despair, you came back to this again and again and again to reset yourself in what is true and what you should cling to, no matter what is thrown at you and how strong the waves and the wind of life are. You see, what if we prayed like this in our heartbreak? God, I offer you my dreams and plans. Do to me whatever seems good to you. I acknowledge your right to rule. Your will be done in me. Y'all, if we were capable of waking up every day in the midst of the heartbreak and saying that and acknowledging that and living according to that and allowing our hopes and our faith to be tied to that, things would drastically change from this day forward in our finances. Maybe not in terms of more money, but in the terms of how we look at it. In our relationships, not in terms that every relationship works out, but in the terms of how we look at it and how we move on from it and how we adjust to the next one. That if we could acknowledge that this is what we want our relationship to look like, and to acknowledge that we aren't really alone and that our God is constantly trying to communicate, I care for you. You are not broken. You are not without purpose. And I've invited you not to an equation. I've invited you to a relationship that allows you, when things seem bleakest, to lean in. Look up. To reach out. And have contact with the God of the universe. And to be able to, in that contact, trust me. I love you, and I know you're hurting, but I need you to trust that I'm working in the midst of your hurt. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who, even when our heart is broken, says that we are not broken. Our value and our worth isn't tied to a relationship here on earth. A God that looks at us and says, you still have purpose. You were created on purpose for a purpose, even when your dreams aren't coming true. A God who invites us to lean in and look up and reach out and to trust that you are bigger. And you see further, even when things aren't going according to my plan. God, this morning, our prayer that we want to return to is simply this. God, this morning, if we are followers of you, we offer you our hopes, our dreams, and our plans. Do whatever seems good to you. We acknowledge your right to rule. Your will be done in me.